I want to become a millionaire, because that's the mindset that people have. Buy low, sell high, right? What's your thoughts on the whole craze of making millions from Bitcoin? So today I got a special guest on the line, Sergey. One thing that I'm a dividend investor. So you guys know I like to make money investing in dividend paying companies and get that dividend payment on a quarterly basis. Crypto is something that I've always known about and been interested in, but I bought some Litecoin back in 2017, but that's pretty much all that happened. But the beginning of this year, I actually learned that you can make passive income from crypto. And there are a couple of ways that I make passive income, which is the thing that kind of got me interested into crypto. And then also talking to my friend, Sergey, he's been investing in crypto for a long time now. Now, Sergey, tell me a little bit about your background in crypto, how you got into it, what you think of it, and then we'll jump into some basic questions and like how to make passive income with crypto.
Yeah, sure. So I'm a software engineer, and so I'm kind of like in that tech space most of the time, right? That's kind of part of my work. So I've heard about Bitcoin when Bitcoin was started kind of popping up in the news. Right around 2013, 2014, something like that.
That's when I heard about crypto also. But I only knew about mining back then. I didn't know you could like actually buy crypto on like a stock exchange.
Yeah, and this was, at the time, I honestly didn't really even pay much attention to what it even is. And, you know, I just knew it was some kind of currency, digital currency and stuff like that. And it's kind of a shame because of my background. Like I should have been jumping on this. But I didn't actually start investing until 2016 and 2017, so about the same time you started. And I remember just buying Bitcoin for like
Bitcoin.
I started with Bitcoin right around. I think I was purchasing it at 250, right around 250. I think.
Are you serious?
At that time, it crashed from its high for like $1,000, I believe.
In 2017, did it not go up all the way to like 17K?
Yeah, I think so. I think it was...
In December, and then it crashed?
Yeah, it went past, I think it was like 1,200 or something like that. Okay. And then it crashed back to right around 750, hovered around 750 for a while. And then it crashed all the way back to like $200, $250. And that's when I'm like, I'll just buy some, like, why not? You know, so it's like, I have no idea what this is still. But it's kind of like, I mean, at that point, it went from like, what, $14 in 2014, 13 or whatever to 250. I'm like, well, this thing is appreciating, right?
Yeah.
And then, so I just bought some as a kind of a YOLO investment, and then, you know, ended up kind of paying off pretty well. So that's kind of how I got exposed to it. And I started like learning about it and, you know, what it's based on, you know, cause a lot of, you know, Bitcoin isn't just, you know, currency. It's also a very interesting technology that kind of spurred a lot of technological advancements in other crypto projects like Ethereum and, you know, and other things now. So it's...
So what are some of the cryptocurrencies that are on the top of your list right now? So you got Bitcoin, but are there any others?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's... So Bitcoin's number one. I also hold Ethereum, Ethereum, Cardano. And there's also a lot of interesting, there's a couple of interesting projects in the DeFi space, which is Polkadot and Chainlink.
Okay.
And so that's, I have just a little bit of that. My primary holdings are basically in the top 10, top 20 coins on the market, basically.
But based on the market cap, pretty much?
Based on the market cap, yeah. Okay. And you can go to CoinMarketCap. And
that's like my favorite website to keep track of like all these different coins and which one is the most. I actually have it up right now on a different screen and I see that. So Bitcoin number one, Ethereum number two, mm-hmm. Binance Coin Tether. XRP, Cardano, Dogecoin.
Dogecoin, of course, the meme, right? Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So even for myself, I bought like about five Litecoin back in 2017 for a little over $100. So I spent like $500 and a couple of extra cents to buy Litecoin back in 2017. And I bought it early December, right before it spiked all the way up, and then it just crashed. And while I was holding on to it, like, I'm not making any money from it, so I'm like, okay, I've been holding on to my Litecoin since 2017. But then in the beginning of this year, I learned about how to make some passive income with the different cryptocurrencies that you own. That's really what sparked my interest. And like right now, I have a little bit over, I want to say 24K to 25K invested into Bitcoin, Ethereum, Litecoin, and Cardano. Those are my four. Now, when it comes to just taking a step back for the beginners, when it comes to cryptocurrency, what actually is a cryptocurrency?
Yeah, I think in order to understand what cryptocurrency is, you kind of have to look at what it's based on, right? All of these projects are based on something called the blockchain. And without like diving into the technical side of it, right? Like in order to get what the blockchain is, you have to kind of see what concept it's based on, which is something that like humans have been using for a very, very long time. It's bookkeeping. It's basically like, if you're a business owner, you want to know how much money you're spending on things, right? You want to know what your business account balance is. So in order to track all of that, you basically put it in a journal and, this is how much I spent today. And this is what my, after this financial transaction, this is what my account balance is, right? Then you can use that, when it's time to pay taxes, you can use that for audits, you can use it for all kinds of things. So that's kind of what blockchain is under the underpinnings of blockchain is basically just a simple bookkeeping. We also call it ledger in the business world, it's called the ledger, financial ledger. Now the problem with that is that it's if you look at this log, right, every entry depends on the entry in the previous entries in the book. So if you remove an entry in the log, you basically it breaks the integrity of the entire log. So the actual account value is not right anymore. So you kind of have to you're basically it's done. You can throw it away. And so that's one issue with it. The other issue is that, typically there's one or maybe like a team of people that's responsible for the integrity of the ledger, right? So if it's a company, it's usually a team of finance people, accountants or whatever that are basically they can tamper with the ledger. I mean, realistically, how often does it happen? I mean, in some companies, we know that some companies do that. They're usually in the news when that happens, and it's not good news. But so it's possible, and those are kind of the problems. The idea behind the ledger is very solid, but the you know there's in order to implement it at mass scale, basically for something like what blockchain is, you have to fix these issues, and that's what a blockchain does. It basically takes this idea and tries to digitize it,
And make it more secure and
make it more secure. And it's basically so in the blockchain, you have transactions written into something called blocks. This is versus like literally a piece of paper in the ledger, right? In the old ledger. And so once a block gets to a certain size, it gets added to the chain, the blockchain. And so now this is where the craziness happens, right? This is a very technically difficult task. It requires a lot of energy, especially for Bitcoin. So what basically happens is, in order to create the block, it needs to get to a certain size of transactions. And so you have these people we call miners who are basically minting these blocks. So they're doing a lot of computationally intensive tasks to basically make this block ready to be added to the blockchain. When it's ready, it gets announced to something called the blockchain nodes. So Bitcoin or blockchain is, especially like a Bitcoin blockchain, is basically it's just a computer network. A computer network of like these interconnected nodes, basically.
And everything is
And
decentralized pretty much.
everything is decentralized because every node basically contains a copy of the blockchain on it. So when a miner basically says, "Oh, I got this block ready, let's go ahead and add it," every single block gets to verify whether the information that's in this new block is actually valid. And
Exactly.
And not only that, once each block verifies that it is valid, it then tells other blocks about the, hey, there's a new block on the blockchain now. And that's how they basically share this information. And so this new block and that gets this information can also do the same verification process. Now, so it's, at any point it doesn't verify, that block is not going to get added and the miner is not going to get paid for the work that they did, basically.
So two quick questions. Is it safe to say that there would be no Bitcoin without the blockchain technology?
Absolutely, yeah.
Can the blockchain technology be used for something else besides cryptocurrencies?
Yeah, there's many uses for this type of technology. Like if you, you know, there's been a lot of chatter about using this for voting. You know, because once you put your transaction, or let's say your transaction could be a vote, right? It doesn't have to be a financial transaction; it could be a vote. Once you put that into a block, it takes an incredible amount of energy. Like for Bitcoin, it takes an incredible amount of energy to change that chain. Once the block gets attached to a blockchain, and every block has basically like a pointer back to the previous block that it was attached to, that linkage takes an incredible amount of effort to break. It costs a lot of money because it costs a lot of energy to do that for a bunch of miners to break that link. That's called the 51% attack in a blockchain.
Now, and when you say mining, do I need to pick up an axe and a shovel and start mining Bitcoin somewhere? What is mining for Bitcoin or mining for cryptocurrency? What is that actually?
A mining, again, without diving into the technical side, it's basically a cryptographic challenge. So it's something that your computer, as a miner, you basically own these farms of, you know, like
of servers and computers.
Servers, yeah. It's something that your computer is going to spend a lot of time spinning its wheels doing to basically come up with the correct response to this cryptographic challenge, basically.
Which is like a math problem.
Exactly. It's just a very difficult math problem. Yeah. As the blockchain grows, the complexity of this challenge increases. So it takes more time and more energy for miner to actually mine a block.
Now, what would be the benefit of mining? Like, why would I want to mine? Like, what would I get out of mining?
Are you tired of feeling lost in the world of trading and investing? Get informed and inspired with the Talking Trading podcast. I'm Louise Bedford, and I'll help you navigate the markets like a pro. Tune in each week and subscribe now at talkingtrading.com.au or on your favorite podcast app, or check out the link in the show notes. Talking Trading, this is how traders excel.
Every miner is basically gets rewarded for the block that they mine. So they at one point it was actually very lucrative back in, you know, in 2010, 11, 12, 13, like those years, it was, you could mine Bitcoin on your computer. Like you basically, you know, that's how a lot of they call them the whales, the Bitcoin whales. That's how they got their Bitcoin, is they literally mined it on their computer. So you could mine it on a CPU. It was a very computationally inexpensive process. You couldn't do it on the CPU anymore. You have to get a graphics card and basically mine it on a graphics card. And now you have farms of these giant farms that basically mine Bitcoin, and they all get rewarded for it. So if you're operating in an area where, you know, electricity is cheap, you know, which I guess a lot of places in China are like that, because they own a lot of it's a pretty significant portion of all of the miners, but miners again are very equally distributed among different nations, but like anywhere where electricity is cheap, it could be like a pretty beneficial thing for you to be doing. Maybe this is, you know, you can set up a little farm and basically start mining. The problem with that, obviously, is that you're essentially wasting a lot of energy. That's one of the kind of like the criticisms of something like a Bitcoin blockchain is it wastes a lot of energy in order to process these blocks and attach them to the blockchain. So it's but yeah, it's I would say right now it's probably very difficult business to get into for a normal Bitcoin investor, just because it's, it takes an incredible amount of computing power to basically mine a block. But it is something that, you know, there's still companies that basically operate at scale, and some of them are like publicly trading companies now.
Gotcha.
And all they do is basically mine Bitcoin. That's their business. That's their
core. So when they mine Bitcoin, they get rewarded in Bitcoin also.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they get rewarded in the Bitcoin. Yeah.
I also heard that some countries and even some governments like China, they are mining Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies like crazy.
Yeah, yeah. It's China has always been like at the forefront of the, you know, the mining industry. And I think a lot of it comes from the fact that, you know, it's a very, there's a lot of issues with the Chinese government, basically, and, you know, they have a lot of power, and basically they have the ability to take away your funds if they really wanted to. So a lot of people are kind of flocking to crypto, and that's kind of what started the whole minor trend in China. Because it's just like it's currency that no one essentially can take away from you unless they know you're basically, unless you give them the private key to your wallet. So China's been at the forefront, but again, it's the entire blockchain. Like, I don't want to make this sound like, you know, they are the sole miners that are not. The United States also has a lot of miners, and so basically, if you look at the geographical locations of miners, basically they're pretty evenly distributed.
Okay.
The biggest countries are probably going to be like China, United States, Russia. You know.
Okay. You mentioned something, a wallet. So let's say you've bought your Bitcoin on a stock exchange or a crypto exchange, and or you're mining it and you got some crypto. Where do you store it? Like, how do you keep it? How do you know where your Bitcoin is? Is it somewhere on the cloud? Is it in a digital wallet? Is it in a physical wallet? Like, how does all that work?
Yeah, so typically for a lot of people, you know, they can purchase Bitcoin on something like Coinbase, which is a very
Binance.
Binance. There's a lot of exchanges. You know, I would typically probably recommend going with somebody like who is trusted, like Binance, Bitcoin. Or I'm sorry, Binance, Coinbase. So all of these exchanges will offer a wallet for whatever currency that they're or cryptocurrency that they're allowing you to purchase on their exchange.
So are you telling me that they will send me a physical wallet in the mail?
It's a digital wallet.
It's a digital
currency, right? So it's a wallet that you can use to store your currency on the exchange. Now the security of the wallet is, you know, that's why I'm saying you have to kind of trust the company, because the security of the wallet depends on the security of the security practices of the actual company that runs the exchange. So, but it's a digital wallet. It has its own address. Usually it's a long, collection of like characters and numbers And then, so in order to transfer money, you basically, it's your address and you know the address of the wallet that you're transferring money to. And that's, you know, it's just, enter one and the other, press send, and you're done.
So when I moved, for example, some cryptocurrency from Coinbase to BlockFi, or from Coinbase to Binance or any other place that I'm transferring it to, I did notice that each individual crypto has its own wallet. So in Coinbase, let's say I have Bitcoin and Ethereum, you have a Bitcoin wallet and an Ethereum wallet.
Yeah, that's this is kind of the complexity of crypto, is that there's just so much to take in. Like, you have these different currencies, and different currencies, you know, trying to solve a different thing. And it also has its own wallet. And on top of that, if you happen to, by mistake, move your, for example, your Bitcoin to an Ethereum wallet, you will probably lose it forever.
Now,
so the chain is pretty unforgiving for things like that. Now, and that's kind of like
why is it set up like that? Because the more I see it becoming mainstream, you're not gonna be moving over like $5 in Bitcoin, $10. Yeah. You might do $1,000. So yeah, let's say you accidentally moved it to an Ethereum wallet. Why has it been set up like that? Why not just block it or give an error message or tell you that, oh, we haven't been able to transfer your crypto because it's going to the wrong wallet? Why just lose all your crypto? That seems kind of harsh.
Yeah, the problem is crypto is still like developing. It's still, you know, pretty much in a pretty heavy development phase. And it's just, we went from basically having like two projects in the entire ecosystem, right? Bitcoin and Ethereum, to, you know, thousands now. I think there's like, 4,000 or 5,000 projects on the coin market cap.
Yeah. When I checked this, like over 4,000.
Yeah. So you're basically crazy. Like, we went from two to that number, and yeah, and now we're talking about, okay, how do we just make a wallet that understands all of these different cryptocurrencies? So it's a pretty difficult challenge because every blockchain operates in a different way.
So are you saying having one wallet for all those different cryptocurrencies?
So that can happen. If you kind of look at some of the coins that are available, right? You have Ethereum, and you also have a lot of coins that are based on the Ethereum blockchain, and so they're called the ECR20 tokens.
Okay.
Basically, that's anything that's based on the Ethereum chain. So those wallets are basically like you only need one to host all of these ECR20 tokens, or basically any cryptocurrencies based on Ethereum. Okay, so just one wallet, and if you hold like 10 or 20 tokens, that's all you need. Now, you cannot move your Bitcoin into that because, again, Bitcoin is just a different type of blockchain.
Exactly.
So there are projects that are currently in the works that, you know, this is kind of where DeFi comes in, right? DeFi is the new kind of like decentralized finance exchange, you know, concept. That's the new trend of 2020 and 2021 in the blockchain, where it basically tries to link like some of these projects and be able to like seamlessly trade, you know, one coin to the other.
Gotcha.
It's all of that is, you know, it's fairly fresh, and we're probably getting to the point where, you know, we're at some point. And I agree with you, in order for this to go mainstream and for a lot of people to use that, you have to kind of eliminate some of these complexities, right?
Got it, yeah.
And some of them are just, I don't know the technical side of why you can't just say, hey, you know what, this is not a Bitcoin address, I can't send Bitcoin there. I don't know what the technical aspects of that, of like why that's not possible. But I think that's something that we'll probably be solving, or the ecosystem will be solving probably in the next 2 years, where you're most likely going to end up with just one wallet containing all of this.
Okay.
And I think there's projects like Chainlink, which I believe like try to kind of like put it all of this ecosystem, kind of like try to combine it basically and make it less complex to use. So that's
okay.
Again, I don't know how far we are from that, but there's definitely efforts to move.
So last time we were at the hookah bar, I remember you telling me about a physical wallet, like the Ledger, Nano, etc.
Yeah,
what's the difference between the digital and the physical? What are some of the benefits? And I know you have, I think, a Ledger, and I'm actually looking at buying. I was talking to my brother. I've been thinking about buying the Ledger from Amazon, but pretty much why would you want to have a physical wallet?
Yeah. Money is all around us, and we think about it more than almost every other aspect of our lives. But how can we make more of it, and what's our drive for building wealth beyond just the numbers in our bank account? Join us on the Make More podcast as our host Matt Heslin brings to you a dynamic lineup of experts in the world of investing, business, health, and beyond. Together, they unpack the secrets to not just surviving, but thriving in today's economy. It's about more than just wealth. It's about crafting life experiences, seizing opportunities, and building a legacy. Subscribe now to the Make More with Matt Heslin podcast and join us every week for new expert insights and inspiration.
Yeah, so physical wallets are...
Or a hard wallet.
Hard wallet, yeah. They're basically... So when you purchase Bitcoin or whatever, Ethereum, on Coinbase, you store those coins on Coinbase. So like I said before, you're essentially relying on the security of Coinbase to make sure that your funds are safe. Now, if something were to happen, and it has happened before, where we had, this is, you know, back in the early days of crypto, I think it was like 2014 or something, where basically an exchange got hacked and a lot of people lost money. You know, you don't really, that's outside of your control. You're not going to be able to do much, right? You're relying on the exchange to recover those funds. And so if you kind of want to eliminate that security aspect, right, the security issue with the exchanges, potential security issues, what you can do is basically get yourself a digital, like an actual hardware wallet, which again, just gives you once you start using it, it's got its own address and it's got its own private key, which you have to record on the piece of paper, basically, in case you ever have to recover your wallet, basically. So you're going to store that in a safe place, and you have your wallet address. You just move funds from your Coinbase or whatever exchange to your wallet, and that wallet is now way more secure than it would be online, basically, in like an online exchange like Coinbase. But at the same time, the security of this wallet is now in your hands, right?
So exactly.
Now you have to maintain. So there's definitely some drawbacks to
having a hard wallet.
Yeah, because it's what happens if your house burns down, right?
Exactly.
So you have to make sure you keep it in the safe place. Now, you know, so that's another thing, is like, is it worth the hassle? Because for the most part, these exchanges, like Coinbase, are
secure,
very safe. Yeah, and I would say there's probably like a certain amount of holdings that you would have to have in crypto in order to consider moving funds over to like a hardware wallet. And it entirely depends on your, like, how comfortable you are with it.
Yeah, because I was talking to my brother about the hard wallet, and they make it so small that it looks like a keychain.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, I'm not going to walk around with the hard wallet in my pocket. If I have, let's say I have 25K invested in Bitcoin, yeah, and it spikes up to 100K, I'm not going to be walking with a wallet with 100K in crypto in my pocket. So it's going to have to be in a safe space.
Yeah, and that's the thing. There's people that do all kinds of crazy things, right? People,
yeah,
that bought Bitcoin in, you know, early days, you know, a lot of them do keep their stuff on their Bitcoins on something like a ledger. And I mean, there's just like all kinds of different security schemes you can employ, like people keeping their security phrases in three different places, like so that if one gets lost, you still have the other one stored somewhere else. I mean, you can get like a safety deposit box and like store your hardware wallet there, you know, so there's a lot of complexity with something that sounds like a pretty novel idea. Like, yeah, I care about my funds, right? I want to keep them secure. And so I'll get like a hardware wallet and just,
yep,
you know, but again, it also gives you the freedom to do whatever you want with your funds. You know, let's say Coinbase goes down because, you know, there was a spike in trading activity and they couldn't handle it. And for some reason, their exchange shut down. And all of a sudden, you can't really move your funds around.
Yeah.
So that it prevents you from like, it saves you from these types of events where it's not necessarily hacked, but it's like, you know, for whatever reason, it could be a technical issue. You don't have access to your funds. Whereas if it's on the actual hardware wallet, you'll always be able to exchange your access your funds.
Yep. So talking about crypto, and I know back in the day, back in 2013, 2014, it was a lot harder to buy crypto. It's a lot easier now because you have exchanges such as Binance and Coinbase. Mm-hmm. But let's say I'm new to crypto and I want to become a millionaire, because that's the mindset that people have. Buy low, sell high, right? What's your thoughts on the whole craze of making millions from Bitcoin? Because that's why a lot of people are jumping into crypto. So they see Bitcoin was 6K or something back in March of 2021, and it jumped all the way to past 60K this year. So people get crazy. They're like, okay, let me jump into Bitcoin. Let me put all my money into Bitcoin. Even let me take my retirement income, put it in Bitcoin, because I'm going to be a millionaire within a month. Like, what do you think about people that have that mindset? And like, what's your thoughts on the whole craze that's going on right now? Because some of these crypto is extremely volatile. So you can make a lot of money quickly, but you can also lose a lot. What's your thoughts on the whole craze pretty much?
Yeah, I think almost everyone that enters the space is just going to lose money the first time they're in it. Like, it's like I lost money, and it's the reason why it's like that is because you're kind of seeing everything, literally everything move up. Like in 2017, at the height of the market, I think 2017, 2018, like anything you put your money in was going up.
Yeah. My Litecoin tripled.
Yeah, it was nuts. It was like, so a lot of people see that and they're like, well, you know, I'll just buy this and that. So they're buying all of these, you know, these crypto projects that are basically, for the most part, you know, I know there's like 4,000 of them, but most of them are worthless. You know, it's just a lot of them are scam, and it's, you know, so it's they're basically just dumping money into all this stuff, hoping to make profit. And, you know, at some point they do, but eventually you kind of end up losing money because the people that bought it, you know, months ago or a year ago end up selling on you. So like basically you end up essentially with, you know, people calling the crypto holding the bag. So you're like, you're essentially holding the coins that someone dumped on you because they bought early and already like 300-400% up, you know?
Yeah.
So that's kind of like what you learn when you're in the market for the first time. It's very difficult not to FOMO in. And it's like, if you're a responsible investor, you're what I think, and again, this is kind of how I would go about it. It's in the bull market. If you're buying in the bull market that we're in right now, it's an opportunity to make money. But if you're buying in the bear market of crypto, it's an opportunity to become wealthy. And so that's the difference. The difference is doing your due diligence, researching projects, and investing into things that make sense to you when nobody's talking about it in the news, when nobody is, you know, when nobody talks about crypto, basically, which, you know, crypto goes through phases of like, you know, I don't know, every 3-4 years we're in a bull market, and each bull market gets longer. And I think each bear market, I don't remember if bear markets get shorter or longer, but like you basically have these periods of accumulation where prices are either going down or they're just moving sideways. And you know, it's that those are the times to buy. You know, it's like the time to buy Cardano was, you know, for example, was probably, you know, you were still in a pretty good spot, you know, like in December, basically.
Yeah, because Cardano was trading below a buck.
Yeah. And those are the best times to buy. People that are buying right now, again, there's still an opportunity to make money.
Yeah, if you play the long-term game.
Yeah. There's still an opportunity to make money. And, you know, but again, you do have to realize the risk that there are people that have been buying the projects that you're buying at the top of the market months ago. And so they're sitting on a lot of profit and they can sell it. They can sell at any time, tanking the price. So those are the things you have to realize. That's why FOMOing in is very risky. You can, you know, if you know when to sell and when to buy, which no one does, like, you know, more power to you. But for the most part, most people don't, right? And so they lose money. So, and that's kind of what happens when people jump in and they see all the crazy numbers and you know, people buying stuff for cheap and then selling at a huge profit. It's great until it just doesn't work out and dumps on you. So quick
tip. So the way I do it, definitely, mm-hmm. You want to pay attention to which cryptos you're buying. So coinmarketcap.com, that's a good website to pay attention to, because I look at the top 10, the top 20. I'm pretty much looking for which cryptos are here to stay. And I do a little bit of research on those, get into the mindset of the creator. What's the end goal for the crypto? So for example, Cardano, you can do some research on that. You can even do some research on Ethereum, something as simple as going to YouTube, looking at the founder. So Charles, who founded Cardano. And then I forgot his name. He has like a very hard name. You might know his name from Ethereum. So just Google their names or just jump on YouTube, do some research on their thought process and what the end goal is for their crypto. And another thing I use, so coming from a dividend investing background, mm-hmm. and even like stock investing, I do use some technical analysis before I buy. And I think I texted you that like, oh, I'm about to buy Cardano, but I'm using my technical analysis skills. So if you have a little bit of those like technical analysis skills, you should be able to transfer those over to when you buy crypto.
Absolutely.
Now, let's get into the fun stuff, because talking about crypto, interesting, but it can also get a lot more technical and boring. Let's talk about like how you can actually make money. So passive income. Yeah, we talked about buying low, selling high. That's what people usually think about. But what about how can you make passive income with crypto?
Yeah, so there's a lot of crypto projects now have something called staking, which basically allows you to, it's kind of like a CD, like the conventional CD accounts where you lock up your funds for a period of time, you know, it's like 5 to 10 years, and you accumulate a certain percentage of like interest rate on your funds. So very similar to that, except that a lot of these projects are now don't even require you to lock your funds up. So for example, Ethereum just recently, I think you can stake Ethereum on Coinbase, and I think there was a waiting list on Coinbase where you could basically kind of jump in on it. So you can right now, if you were to sign up, you can stake your Ethereum on Coinbase for like 6% or something.
Oh, okay.
Like that.
Okay.
Which is, it's pretty, you know, again, Coinbase, I trust Coinbase. So, you know, it's pretty solid return if you're just, you know, if you're planning on holding Ethereum for a long time, you know, this is, why not, right? This is 6% is pretty good. It's actually better than infinitely better at this point than anything you would get like on your funds in the bank, right? Because last time I checked, my savings account was at like
0.1%, 0.01 or something. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's the returns are pretty great. You know, so with Cardano, I don't know how Ethereum staking works on Coinbase. I don't know if they actually lock your funds up for a period of time. I'm not entirely sure. I haven't really done much with staking on Coinbase yet. With Cardano, it's very different. You're basically, for example, you can move your Cardano to
Cardano wallet. Daedalus, Exodus, Euro.
Yeah, there's a number of wallets that basically support delegating your funds, your Cardano funds to a stake. And then typically the payout is like
anywhere between 4-7%, what I've noticed.
Yeah, which is still pretty good, right? And then you get paid, I believe it's weekly. So you get paid, like my payout is like, I think it's on a Monday morning or something like that. So it's if you're planning on holding in the bull market and just, or maybe long-term, I don't know, whatever your timeline is, this is a great way to make like some side income. And a lot of, again, there's Cardano, there's also like, there's also sites like BlockFi, which basically allow you to open an account with them, transfer your Bitcoin or Ethereum and stake with them for, I think their Bitcoin Ethereum is 5.6%. You can also stake stable coins there, which is basically like any cryptocurrency that's pegged to US dollars. So it has, it will never be more than $1 or less than $1.
So so pretty much with staking, what you're doing is you're using your crypto in order to help that that eco-structure, right? So
correct,
if transfers are being made, if anything is happening on that specific blockchain for that crypto, you're helping out the pretty much the ecosystem, which in turn rewards you by giving you a small payment in that specific cryptocurrency. So let's say if you're staking Cardano, you will get a small percentage back in Cardano. It's like making some passive income. And then Coinbase, I think you just need to hold your crypto in Coinbase and it will automatically stake, but I'm not too sure about that. Binance, it is like that in Binance, but Binance.us, but the amount of crypto that you can stake is pretty limited. Cardano is not even on the list. And then with BlockFi is more like a savings account. So they lent out your crypto to bigger institutions and companies. And in return, you make a percentage back in interest, kind of like a savings account, but it's a lot higher. Bitcoin and BlockFi is 6%. At the moment, it always fluctuates, of course. Yeah. Ethereum, 5.25%. Litecoin, 6.5%. Mm-hmm. Last time I checked, yeah.
Yeah, and so just like with everything else, right, this all sounds great, but there's also caveats. Like, it's none of the stuff is FDIC insured. So if something happens, if something happens, and, you know, like, not saying that BlockFi is never going to run away with your money or anything like that, but like, if there is some kind of a hack or something like this, some kind of security issue, or and your funds are lost, there, you know, it's on the company to repay you. Nobody's going to step in and basically there's no insurance company that's going to pay you out. So those are the things you have to kind of pay attention to and consider when you're staking your funds. Also with things like BlockFi, they essentially open a wallet for you, a digital wallet for your Bitcoin or Ethereum, and you're moving your funds from Coinbase or your hardware wallet.
That's what I had.
BlockFi. So you're essentially giving up the private key of your funds to BlockFi. So if something were to happen, they're in total responsibility of like maintaining your funds. Again, that's another security concern. I'm not saying that anything will happen, but it certainly could. It's probably unlikely. BlockFi is pretty well regarded in the space. I think they're one of their biggest partners is Fidelity. Wow. And so they're doing pretty good. And yeah, like you said, the funds, essentially the way they make you money is by you contributing to the platform. So like for BlockFi, yeah, there's different ways they basically are able to pay you back. One of the ways is to essentially provide the funds that you stake for loans, for crypto loans. So if somebody wants to take a loan out on BlockFi, they can basically, they're essentially lending them your money. And, you know, and then when they pay you back, when the money gets paid back, they pay you the interest
and on it. And BlockFi is not the only player in town. Celsius is one. You got a couple of them, pretty much. So are those pretty much like the two main ways to make some passive income, by staking and by using websites like BlockFi? Are those two pretty much the main ways of making passive income, or are there some additional ones? Because those are the only two that I know.
Yeah, those are pretty much the ones. That's how I kind of, that's what I use.
Yeah.
There might be other ways that, you know, I'm not really familiar with anything else that's as easy to use. And that's pretty, you know, it's pretty, pretty easy to set up for a newbie, right? If you're new to the space, staking is your friend. Like it's really good to do. The one thing that I would recommend is, like I said, because, you know, with Cardano, it's pretty safe in the way, in the nature of the way you delegate to the stake, the money is in your wallet, so it doesn't actually leave your wallet. So it's actually a very, very safe way to delegate your Cardano or stake your Cardano and get paid, because the money never leaves your wallet. It's very secure. Like with BlockFi and Coinbase, you know, that's not the case. You're putting your funds in someone else's wallet to basically to kind of delegate. So it's, you know, there's some drawbacks, but overall, like, you know, my advice would be to, you know, with something, if there is a risk, don't put all of your eggs in the same basket. You know what I'm saying? So again, delegate what you're comfortable, or stake what you're comfortable.
Yeah, staking. That makes sense.
Maybe it's 20-30%, whatever it is for you, right? It's different for every person, whatever you're comfortable with. So just make sure that you are aware of the risk. Like, it's, you know, none of the stuff is FDIC insured. You can lose your money.
So Bitcoin, the original, there are some altcoins. And altcoins are alternatives because when Bitcoin got introduced, there were a lot of programmers that wanted to take a different path and they didn't agree with how things were set up with Bitcoin. That's why, like, you have a Bitcoin fork, which is called Bitcoin Cash. Mm-hmm. But what are some of the alternative coins or altcoins that you are looking into right now and that are high on your list?
I think, so basically, by the way, like Ethereum and, you know, even Ethereum is an altcoin, considered an altcoin. Basically anything that's not Bitcoin is essentially your altcoin. Well, even though Ethereum is kind of like, has become like one of those, it's a name as big as Bitcoin now. So everyone thinks it's kind of like mainstream.
Yeah. When I look at CoinMarketCap, of course they're number two. So mm-hmm. Bitcoin has a market cap of, what is it? 900 billion.
Yeah.
And then Ethereum has 254 billion. So mm-hmm. Ethereum is not that far behind.
Yeah. And the one thing that's a little bit misleading too is, you know, you can look at the coin market. I tend to look at the top, you know, top 10, 15 projects on coinmarketcap.com, which is the website that I go to kind of like, you know, those are the projects that I focus on. But the problem with that is also like, just because a coin has a high market cap doesn't necessarily mean it's a good project. So you do still need to do due diligence, right?
Yep.
In my opinion, like my holdings are basically, like I probably have like 80% of my holdings in Bitcoin, and about like 10 to 15% in Ethereum. And then I've got some Cardano, Polkadot, and Chainlink. Those are the only projects I'm looking at. And those are basically like, you know, Cardano is essentially kind of like a hedge against Ethereum. So usually the movements of Cardano are kind of like they counter the movement of Ethereum. So if Ethereum starts like accumulating, Cardano usually starts moving. So it's kind of, Cardano is also trying to fix a lot of issues of like that Ethereum struggles with, like high fees and things like that. Usually that's the Ethereum is the project Cardano is like is compared to.
Yeah, because Bitcoin is generation one, Ethereum is I think generation two, and then Cardano generation three, right?
Yeah,
that's what I heard. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's so you basically have that, and then you have, you know, like the Polkadot and Chainlink. Those are like, you know, those are like DeFi projects. That's just the trendy. That's the trend. So every kind of bull run has a trend attached to it.
Yeah.
And this one started with DeFi, and Polkadot and Chainlink are basically kind of like the two interesting players in that space that have kind of proven that, you know, they're solid projects. And, you know, so it's those are basically the ones that I'm looking at. You learn this when you lose money. You really don't want to, like, when you start going into like the 200th or whatever coin on the coin market cap, like you're getting
it's gonna be pretty risky.
It's some risky stuff, and that's where, you know, and not to say that you none of these things are, you know, none of these things are gonna basically I'm not saying that they're like scam or anything like that, but there's definitely some questionable activity happens in these projects. And So you kind of need to research, you know, like Cardano wasn't, you know, it didn't jump to the top of the list. Like, you know, like this only happened recently. So for a very long time, it was a project that really not a lot of people talked about because it was a lot of it was just like hypothetical, like it's PhD level thesis, basically from Charles, essentially his ideas on what the blockchain should look like. And then it kind of developed into that. So that's the stuff that you need to be aware of.
Yeah,
but in my opinion, like I just look at top 10, top 15. That's kind of where.
Okay, so Sergey, Dogecoin is number 7 on the top 10. So of course, then it means it's one of those coins that I need to invest in, right?
And yeah, so that's the problem with going just by the market cap. You get like Dogecoin and stuff like that, and it's Dogecoin is. so it's the meme coin, right? Everyone flocks to it because it's cheap, and it's like they look at the price of Bitcoin and it's like, you know, it's like it's over 60K or it was last week, and you know, Elon Musk is talking about it, and it's like,
yeah, he's tweeting about it.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's Dogecoin has become the people's coin, right? It's just it kind of demonstrates the power of like of the
of like getting people hyped up into buying something like a hot stock, in this case a hot crypto, but it's not, the underlying value is like is nothing.
Yeah, there's no
but
utility behind it.
Here's the thing: could they make it interesting and be like, okay, let's actually turn Dogecoin into something that can actually benefit, like how, like we have the Bitcoins, the Ethereums, the Cardano. Could they do that? Could they like just flip the switch and be like, okay, you know what? Let's actually take this to the next level and let's actually make it a utility that we can use.
Yeah, and absolutely. I think if the team were to get together and like, hey, like, let's capitalize on this, you know, on the fact that we are becoming the people's coin, right? It's like, it's one of those, it's, you know, we were a meme, and you know, maybe we can build something off of that and become something more. Absolutely. I think it's all, you know, it's in the power of the, you know, whoever is maintaining the project. I don't think that that's going to happen because like I'm pretty sure that Doge just kind of moves up every time we're in a bull market. Like everything eventually gets to a point where like everything moves up, and this is just kind of one of those things.
Yep.
But but it's just like I said, Doge is kind of an interesting thing because it's highlighting the power of the people to just like, you know, like this is the coin on, you know, it's like cheap, everyone pile in and get some, you know what I'm saying? And it's like, you know, everyone's talking about it because it is, it's kind of like the positive side of like humanity in crypto. It's like, you know, it's fun, you know, and it's like nobody really takes it seriously. It's just like it's one of those things that like, yeah, I have like $100, I'll throw it in there. It's just, it's kind of like gambling for normal people, you know. It's like
I have really zero Dogecoin.
Yeah, most people don't. It's like, it's like once you're, if you're serious, you will never ever jump into it. If you're, you know, obviously like financial institutions will never be interested in it. So it's mostly people that are new to the space and they're just don't really know. There's not much to learn. Like it's like you said, there's no utility behind it. There's no purpose. It's just a meme coin that was, I think it was a forked off of Bitcoin.
Yep.
And it's just something fun that people want to like, you know, they want to participate, but don't really understand how things work. So they just kind of buy into this and just follow along, you know. It might be actually, maybe that's the purpose of Dogecoin. It's just, it's, you know, it's the gateway to crypto. It's like you buy a little bit and then you start paying attention. You know?
Because it is, I mean, it dropped by, I don't know how many percentage in the last few days. So it currently is at 26 cents.
Yeah.
So if you're new to crypto and you're looking at, because I'm looking at it right now, and you look at Bitcoin, which is like what's this? It's like almost 50K. And then you look at Dogecoin, 26 cents. You're like, oh, okay, I can buy a couple of Dogecoin. So maybe that is a benefit of having Dogecoin. Yes. Maybe it is the coin that gets new people into buying crypto.
Yeah. Yeah, and honestly, this is why I think people like Musk, Elon Musk, like it, because it's just a way for people to kind of like start browsing the crypto space.
Yeah,
like realizing that hey, there's potential here.
Yeah,
you know, it's not regulated by U.S. banks. This is like completely new, and you know, this is it's literally the new era of finance. And I think that's like. It's not because he thinks that it's a good investment. This is my opinion. It's because this is just the gateway to like being able to figure out, okay, what is this all about? Because, you know, if you think about it, like buying into Bitcoin at this point at 60K is nuts. Like you have to, for a normal person like you and me, like buying this stuff is pretty, it's pretty expensive, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, and again, it's one of the things in human brain is like, you know, we want to own the whole thing.
Exactly.
To own the whole, one whole Bitcoin is 60K right now. To own one whole coin of Dogecoin is like, it's not, like a 26 cents.
Yeah, less than a buck.
Know. Yeah.
And that's the benefit, even with the crypto that I have, Ethereum, Bitcoin, I own a fraction of Bitcoin. I don't own the whole Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. So we've talked about a lot. we covered a lot. Any other websites that you use to just keep an eye on the whole crypto space, and any projects that you are working on at the moment that you want to share with the audience?
Yeah, I do follow some people on YouTube for like my daily crypto intake. And it's usually like, I would absolutely suggest avoiding anyone who's trying to like introduce you to something that might 10x or whatever. Like that's almost a recipe for disaster. These people are making money off of you, so completely like avoid doing this stuff. I do follow people that like do technical analysis and kind of basically explain the trends for like the daily trends, the weekly trends, kind of like the stuff you were talking about, right? Where you wanted to get into Cardano, but you wanted to make sure you're buying it at the right time. Yeah, that's kind of the those kind of the people that I tend to follow. I don't really necessarily do anything else. Just crypto news, you know, stuff like that. I might go through that one more time. For me, this is like, you know, I don't live in the space like 24/7. This is just something that, you know, and this is the beautiful things, right? If you're buying stuff that you believe in and stuff that is solid projects, you don't have to worry about it. Like you just, you know, if you bought it at a good time, not in the middle of this crazy market, right, where it can dump on you any day, like you just kind of live, set it and forget it. So this is kind of what I do. I just browse trends, listen to people that kind of know what's going on. I think one of the guys that I follow is Benjamin Cohen. He posts stuff daily on YouTube, and he's really good at kind of explaining different trends on the weekly, on the monthly, on like the cyclical basis and stuff like that. And that's basically all I do. I mean, you don't really need, you know, just research. A lot of these projects have something called white papers. You can kind of go read, what the project's trying to tackle. Some of these things are pretty technical. So you can just, again, YouTube's your friend. I mean, you can do like, just go Google or go YouTube and see if you can find like an easier explanation for what does Cardano do? What does the Ethereum do? Like, what is, you know, so, YouTube is amazing, right? You just kind of have to ignore some of the stuff that is like people trying to sell you things. So that would be my strategy. Just kind of, you know, use that. There's awesome. A ton of smart people that basically can explain things very, very well. So,
and that's pretty much, Sergey, that's pretty much what I've been doing. So jumping on YouTube a lot, there's so many tutorials on YouTube, even what is crypto, what's the BlockFi? I mean, what's the blockchain? And even like following Charles, who is the founder of Cardano, he has his own YouTube channel. So I subscribe to his channel. Yeah. So it's really easy to get some information on like a particular crypto. And the white papers, just go to the main website of the crypto that you're planning on buying. They should have a link to their white paper, which will give you all the information that you need. A lot more actually that you need. It's going to get a lot more technical. So that's why Sergey said, just go to YouTube or even online and try to do some research on your crypto. Thank you for listening to my podcast on stock market investing. Be sure to subscribe to my YouTube channel, which you can find by searching my name, Giovanni Richters. Also, be sure to check out my books and audiobooks on stock market investing. I'll catch you in the next episode.